Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bigamax Radio Podcast. This episode is brought to you by LuxonMX, and you can lock in discount code BIGAMAX2024 to save 10% off every single one of your purchases. A set of triple clamps can be as much as $1,000. 10% off, that's $100. Thanks to our friends over here at Bigamax Radio. You're very welcome, and I hope that you buy some clamps, maybe some bar mounts. And with us on the line is the sole proprietor and the big boss of the hot sauce over at LuxonMX. Billy White, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you doing?
Not doing too bad, man. Like I said off air, I am in a winter wonderland of nonstop snow, but you've been sending me some nice warm vibes from sunny California, so I'm feeling all warm and fuzzy over here.
Yeah, it's not too cold here. We're in San Diego, so it's low 60s now.
Yeah, that's winter for you guys.
Yeah.
Although the days do get short in California. I'm always blown away by that, is that, like, I always think that we're just in perpetual darkness, which we sort of are. 4 o'clock onward, it's pretty dark up here. But whenever I'm in California, I'm always blown away that it's basically like full blown dark outside at 7 o'clock, no matter what time of year.
Yeah, I mean, midsummer it gets to almost 8 before it's dark, but right now it's starting to turn dark right now. It's 4:15, so it varies.
Fair enough. So, as we spoke off air, LuxonMX is, like most things, a long, drawn-out overnight success. In the last couple of years, there's been more talk and more notoriety to your brand that has been making waves for quite a long time. You and I have been working together on the podcast for, it's 3 years now, which is kind of blowing, it blows me away that, like, the first time I had you on my podcast was, like, the first year that I moved into my old apartment. I've lived here 2 years already. So, first, before we get into the nuts and bolts of the products and what makes them so special, tell me a little bit about the brand itself and how it's sort of come to where it's at now.
The whole thing started as a side project 10 years ago to my engineering firm, because I grew up riding and racing motocross and mountain bikes and everything, and I wanted to try and apply the engineering side to the motocross world. And so I kind of did really slowly back in 2014. And then things really picked up around 2020, and just been growing, like, basically doubling year over year since then. So the last year has been a tremendous amount of growth, as well as the year before that, sponsoring new teams and getting a lot of people out on our product. And it's been really a really good story. Good success.
Yeah, no, it really truly has been. And that almost kind of begs the question as to, like, when did you know that, like, I knew, you know, you were onto something with your products before that people really found out about them and the impact that they can have. But when did you know that you were getting enough, like, positive feedback from the industry and the community that, like, no, we're onto something?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say, really. It just kind of slowly grew from the get-go. I mean, once we were on a few pro teams, I mean, the first year we really sponsored anyone, I think it was 2019. And that was just like Stank Dog and maybe another guy or two local pros.
Yeah, you've been with Carnow for at least 3 years now, right?
Yeah, at least three. And then now I'd have to count them up, but there's, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. 6 pro teams are running our stuff, one being an MXGP team. So we got worldwide presence, plus a bunch of privateer guys, and we're in talks with a couple other teams as well. So it's grown quite a bit, and we're all over the place.
No kidding. When it comes to, like, the MXGP, like, that, there's literally people watch that series, follow the series, and watch it very closely from all over the world. Where is, like, the craziest place that you've boxed up some clamps and sent them off to?
I don't know, really. I mean, I've shipped
Turkey
all over the world. So nothing really stands out, just because we've shipped things everywhere now.
Yeah. I'm always blown away when I look at the podcast analytics, and there's people who will, they're watching, they're listening or watching in Russia, they're watching or in, like, I don't think, like, Australia is not a huge stretch, but, like, Philippines or India. And I'm like, who's a loyal listener from India? I have to know. But that's pretty wild. What was the first, like, 'cause you're an engineer, and like engineers to me are problem solvers. What was that first product that you were like, I need to create something to fix this problem? How'd you fix it?
Well, really the first main product we had was triple clamps. And that's because that was the best application of our engineering technology and skill set. Basically, it stems from on our engineering side, we do a lot of, it's called light weighting, where you're trying to make a part as light as possible while still meeting the stiffness and strength criteria. Very aerospacey kind of stuff we're typically dealing with. But that fits in really well with the triple clamps because that can really show what we're capable of. So just a example wise, the Yamaha triple clamp that we first came out with, I think was 0.8 pounds lighter than stock, but stronger.
And that's a lot.
Yeah. With better, I hate the word flex character, but, better, stiffness properties, and stiffness is directional. So that they go down a rabbit hole with that, but better is the simple answer there.
So why do we not like the term flex characteristics? Yeah, it gets thrown around a lot. It's a very kind of kitschy word that testers and people who pretend to be in the know seem to like to throw around.
Yeah, it's just annoying because it's easy to throw it out there and you're basically saying a lot of nothing while sounding like you're saying something.
Yes, I love it.
Yeah, so flex character generally refers to how something flexes and feels, but that saying it has good flex character doesn't really mean too much specifically.
Fair enough. Yeah, because everything has flex characteristics. No matter, like a cinder block has flex characteristics. So when it comes to triple clamps, like, and the Gen 3 has essentially two different versions. I want you to take me through them. Before you do that, like, you guys work with some of the most high-end athletes who ask so much of their motorcycle and the parts on them. How do you produce a triple clamp that in the hands of a Logan Carnow or a Cody Shock, who are at the absolute precipice, the elite of the sport, and it works for them and it works for me too?
Well, there's a lot of crossover between just the everyday rider and the top pro. There are certainly some areas that are different as well. There's multiple perspectives. Weight, you want the thing to be as light as possible no matter who you are. Lower weight, bike goes faster with less effort. So that's pretty straightforward.
Yep.
Strength, the pros are definitely going to require a clamp with more strength because they're really putting it through the paces and pushing things hard. But if you make a clamp that's strong enough for the top pros, it's certainly going to be strong enough for everyday, you and me kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a problem. The fuzzy area is stiffness. And this kind of goes into what I was talking about earlier with the whole flex character stuff. Stiffness is directional. So your stiffness front to back is going to be something very different than your stiffness up and down versus side to side versus in torsion where you're trying to twist the bars and the resistance of deformation there. And in general, we want to keep everything as stiff as absolutely possible in all directions except front to back. Front to back is what's giving you your comfort.
Right.
So flex in that direction that's not the direction the suspension moves is what's giving you comfort.
Hmm.
Whereas every other direction you want to be as stiff as possible, which ironically also gives you comfort because if your clamps are really stiff vertically, your fork tubes aren't going to be misaligned when they go under the load. And they won't bind up as much. So it allows the suspension to really soak things up better and be more plush, even though the clamps themselves are stiffer. And then similarly, in torsion and less so side to side, you want it to be as stiff as possible. So when you turn the bars, the front wheel is turning as well. It doesn't lag behind it. You get a really precise feel.
Interesting. So what you're saying in some ways is you could get the most out of a well-tuned fork by going with your product as far as like going for like switching away from whatever comes stock on, whether it's a KTM, Yamaha, Kawasaki.
Yeah, especially with KTM because they've been pushing for lightweight parts a long time now and their stuff is really flexy, which mm-hmm. actually leads people to believe it's really stiff, but it's not. It's just so flexy that everything's kind of binding up. And
yeah, it creates harshness. I feel that in my 2024. We need to talk about shipping some clamps my way, especially because I have that kind of time this winter to pull some seared apart. Before I want to get into the differences between the Gen 2 and Gen 3, but before we get to go to that, I actually am reminded of a video that Verb put out about, it was actually right around Loretta's, where Caden Dundee, and I think this is maybe like if I can put a link to this post, and I'll send it to you if you think this is a good representation of what you just told me, is that like they did an 800 frames per second like slow motion shot of him landing off of the bigger double in at Loretta's, and you literally see the fork like as he's landing, like it basically like lurches forward, and the whole bike gets raked out, and it's twisting within the front of that. I'm not saying that can go away in any type of way, any shape or form, but like you said, the comfortability is almost built into that sort of motion, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I recall that video, so I know you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
So the clamps are a big part of that, obviously.
Yeah.
That front to back stiffness, but you also have your chassis stiffness and your fork tube stiffness. Those are the main ones. Everything else flexes to some smaller amount, but those all contribute to how much that front wheel is moving in the direction that's not in the direction of the fork movement. So that is giving you more comfort. But if you get too much movement there, then you start losing handling and predictability. Because, like you said, the rake is changing.
So right.
You can get wandering feelings when you're hitting big G-out situations, coming into a corner, or whoops, anything that's causing that flex. So there's a balance between too much flex and comfort, or too much flex and maintaining the precision, which kind of compromises your comfort.
Right. With how steep the transitions are in Supercross, like, is it realistic to think that if you're really pushing into a jump face, that the rake of the front wheel is actually going to come in a bit upon takeoff? Or
yeah, it's not such an issue in jump faces coming into a jump face. It's more of a landing and coming into a bowl turn.
Okay,
because then you're also in steering motion as you're coming into a turn and a big G out situation there. That and whoops are a big one. Just as the bike is hammering through the whoops, you don't want things wandering one way or the other. So stiffness there really helps in predictability. But like I said, if you get too much stiffness, then you lose all your flex and then you don't have the comfort.
Right. Absolutely. Then you end up with a bike setup like James Stewart's, where he basically just had steel rods for fork tubes. So that was the whole thing. But let's get into the Gen 3 a little bit. I know there's two versions. What are the differences? Why would you choose one over the other? Is there, like, get into it for me. You know this stuff better than I do.
So there's two. There's the Gen 3, and then there's the Gen 3 Pro.
Yeah.
And I'll start with the Pro version. That is basically the ultimate triple clamp. It is adjustable offset. There's four different offsets. Most other clamps with adjustable offset only have two. So it really covers your bases on offset. Titanium bolts. It's made from 7075 T6 aluminum, which is very strong. More intricate design work. So there's more intricate machine work, which creates a lighter weight product with no compromise in stiffnesses or strengths. Just little details throughout that are just above and beyond anything else out there. The Gen 3 standard takes that same design, but then it makes it a fixed offset instead of an adjustable offset. And we cut costs here and there, mostly with steel bolts instead of titanium bolts. It still is quite intricate machining, but not as intricate as the Gen 3 Pro. And then the material is 6061 aluminum, which is a little bit less expensive. Not quite as strong, but the overall product is still plenty strong.
Hmm.
So what that is, that's just a way to bring a really high-end triple clamp more to the masses. It's a lot more approachable price point.
Yeah, the difference being one's $1,000 and one's $700. That's a 30% difference in overall price. Like I said, off the hop, Big MX 2024 saves you 10%. Like, you're just giving away money. You're an absolute mad scientist with my listeners here, and I hope they're using that damn code. I also noticed that there's a few more colors floating around on different teams and different bikes than what's available on the website. And we've talked about this on prior podcasts. You make some really cool colors and some stuff, but it is obviously more often than not limited runs and stuff like that. But if someone wants something special, you can make it happen, can't you?
Yeah, pretty much. So we work real closely with our anodizer. They're just up the street from us,
yeah,
which is real nice. I was just there today, actually.
Amazing. And
we can offer any color that they offer, which is a lot of colors. You'll see a lot of weird stuff on our pro teams just because we like to stand out. So Club MX, most people know that. They're running that light blue turquoise color. That's not our standard blue. It's just a special color for them.
Yeah, it pops. It really does. They recently did a post with Mohead, sort of like doing some work in the garage, and he's got a set of clamps set up with a pair of bars. Like, that's got to be worth a few people dialing you up. Like, that it just looks so sick.
Yeah, we're sponsoring a new team this year, Dirt Bike Depot KTM, and they're running purple clamps.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we can do a lot of different colors. Our standard colors are just the normal. They're black for every brand, plus the color of the brand. So Cowie, we have green, and Honda, we have red, and so on. So those are standard. No problem with those. But we can do any color aside from that. It just comes with either an upcharge, or you got to wait until we happen to run that color. Then it would just be no charge.
How many people call you up looking for like the pro circuit, like the bronze, like the brown?
A few people. I'm not a big fan of that color, just because if you're running a really high-end triple clamp, you're probably running a high-end fork, which is going to be like a Kashima tube usually.
Yeah.
So brown on brown never really looks good. You want
contrast there. What do you run on your bike?
Well, one of them is regular blue, and then the other bike is the Club MX blue.
Oh, Fendi, you get yourself a set of those. I'm not totally surprised by that. Some of the feedback that you've gotten from clients, I imagine there's some cool success stories over the years where people they were completely beside themselves as far as the feedback they were getting from their motorcycle. Have you sort of some people just look at you the reincarnation of Jesus Christ or what?
Yeah, I mean, we got a section on our website for just the testimonials and media reviews and stuff. So we got a bunch of testimonials written up there, and people are generally pretty stoked once they get the parts on the bike and ride it. It's a lot bigger change than what most people think it will be, and generally it's all positive.
For sure, and there's a lot of good information in this podcast and the other three that we've done together. But I noticed you also have a fair number of blog posts on the website that if people want to sort of just get technical and dig in a little bit, you're not afraid of really flexing the engineering muscles with that as well. I like that you don't dumb anything down for the audience, at least as far as I know. Maybe you take a little bit of speed off your fastball when it comes to the technical talk, but there's a lot of really good information in there.
Yeah, I mean, I try and make it so it's readable.
To the layperson.
Yeah,
bricklayers up in Canada.
They can understand what it is I'm trying to get across. Because I could talk completely engineering speak, and no one would want to read it all. So that's the point. I try and make it so it's something that you can learn and better understand how your bike works, why things are designed the way they are, or whatever the topic has to be. But I got a whole big list of blogs I want to push out. It's just a matter of finding time to do it, and things have been a little bit crazy lately. But
I think I remember last time on the podcast offering my services, man. I peck away at a computer all day long. I'll work on it for you.
Yeah, it's tough to get across everything in my head without me actually doing it.
I'll just keep bugging you then. How about that? Let's talk about some bar mounts. I think that's something that not enough people know that you do. And they also don't know the impact of them. Take me through.
So we have a new system, relatively new. It's been out a year now, our four-post bar mount system. And if you remember the old RG3 triple clamps,
yep,
that had like four-post design with two sets of rubber cones per side, it's kind of like that, except they're all integrated into the bar mount itself.
So it's a lot of adjustability.
Yeah, this allows, say, the bar mounts that we've designed for our triple clamps, the Gen 3 clamps, you can end up with six different bar positions front to back. And then there's riser kits. So there's a total of 24 bar positions. So there's the right position is in there for you. So that's for our particular triple clamp, but we make the same system for stock clamps. So if you've got a Honda, Cowie's really bad, Yamaha, where you tip over and the bar mounts twist up real easy, these will replace your stock bar mounts and it will stop that from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So the way the four-post design supports the bars, they physically can't twist in a crash or tip over like the stock ones can. So you just take your stock ones off, put ours on, and you don't have that problem anymore. They're super lightweight. They're tunable. They come with three different hardnesses of bushings. So you get that nice vibration and shock-absorbing feel like you have with regular rubber-mounted bars, but you can tune that feel. So really,
are there different elastomers that come with the bars?
Yeah, it comes with three different sets of elastomers, soft,
medium. Okay.
No extra charge for that; just comes with it.
Oh, cool. It's been a while since I had a new Kawasaki, but my 08 Kawasaki bars they'd be twisted if I looked at it funny.
Yeah.
Like they had this super old school sort of system. It was totally rubber mounted. And if the bike fell off the stand, tip over, no matter what, like your front wheel is pointed that way. And I'm like, okay, great. Is it at all better even in 2024? Even in stock trim, or are we still living in that? No,
it's still the same design as it was back in 2002 or whenever they first
awesome
started coming out with those things. So, it's the same problem people have always had.
Yeah.
Tip over and everything twists up. You can loosen it back up and get it back straight again, then tighten it back up and you're good, but that's a big pain.
Yeah. Nice, but then also like once it goes once, it'll just go right back to that. Like I feel like it just like it almost has like a memory of like, or it's just that much easier for it to go back. I ended up replacing the rubbers with there was like basically some solid replacements for it, like gave me like the worst feedback I could possibly imagine, because it was just like a lot of vibration after that, but my bars didn't move. Have there been some like pretty funky setups as far as like some pretty tall people dialing you up saying like, yo, I'm 6'8 and I want to ride my dirt bike, how do I set up my bars for this?
Yeah, I mean that's one of the reasons we went to our bar mount design on our Gen 3 triple clamps to give 24 different positions.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody likes something different. And it doesn't always correlate. If you're super tall, you don't necessarily want a really tall bar.
Yeah, position. Benny Bloss runs a normal setup.
So it's good to have a clamp setup that gives all those options. So if you want to try something really tall, go for it. It doesn't cost anything. Take it off, put it back if you don't like it, or move it around wherever you want it. Gives a lot of options there. That was another thing that the pros really drove for our clamp design into the Gen 3, because when you give a set of clamps to a team, everybody wants something different for bar position. A lot of guys are super picky. So with all those positions, we got the whole field covered.
Well, like you work with athletes, man, and athletes are head cases, but like you can just like put a little bit extra, like a dash of something else in there when it comes to motocross racers, because those kids they're just unique, special little butterflies, and they need their special setup. Like, you don't have to name who he is, but like, give me a scenario of someone who was like, no, was really difficult to get happy, and how did you get him happy? You can just say if it was Phil.
Well, I was going to mention Phil. So the bar mounts for the club guys, I made a special run of mounts for them, and the bottom, I think I got one sitting here actually.
Nice.
Well, you probably can't see it, but
I can see that.
It's got the word Phil for the name. Phil.
Bastard.
Engraved in the bottom. Because this mount is 2 millimeters different in one direction than our stock regular offering. Because Phil needed 2 millimeters difference. Which if you... I don't know if you've ever seen what 2 millimeters really looks like.
I'm a bricklayer, man. I work with millimeters all the time. Yeah, there it is. Nothing.
Just for finger, for reference.
Yeah.
It's tiny. It's less than the thickness of your grips.
Mm-hmm.
But Phil needed that, so I said, okay, fine.
And then he retired.
Yeah.
No, he's going to do some racing anyway. That's interesting, though. And yeah, you're right. Like, it not necessarily does like a taller rider need or even desire like a different sort of setup. I know like my first example is Benny, is the fact that his setup is actually very just neutral ascent. Like he doesn't really do the lower pegs. He doesn't do the super tall bars. Lord knows I needed taller bars when my dad left me on a KX85 way too long. That photo's gone around the internet pretty well so far. I was 13 and I'm the height that I am now on that goddamn thing. So you can just imagine. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, is linkage components, because I find the majority of the people that I ride with, everyone's always talking about the fork. They're like, it's because it's in our hands. It's the front wheel, but not a lot of conversation about ever changing out knuckles, not a lot of switching out pull rods or the ratios like that. I just think there's just so little understanding of the rear, of how the linkage works. It does look complicated based on like how it does what it does. But there's a lot of gains that can be made there as well as on the comfort level. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like you said, the fork is something that's connected to your hands. You really get a lot of people who complain more about the fork and they can live with whatever happens in the rear.
Yeah.
And I definitely understand that. I complain more about the fork than anything else too. But if you really start paying attention to what goes on with your rear end, you'll notice coming out of a corner in acceleration chop, especially if you're on a KTM, Husky Gas, it gets a little dicey and you lose the rear end. It gets some weird kicks sometimes. If you really start paying more attention to what the rear end does, even though it's not as vital to your comfort as the fork, there's a lot of performance gains that can happen there. And first off, before we just go selling people linkages, thinking that they're going to get a great gain, you need to make sure everything is set up properly, your sag set, your correct spring rate, things are valved properly. And once you've exhausted that and you feel like the bike is pretty good, that's when you want to go looking for these extra gains of getting a linkage arm or a knuckle change. And there's definitely gains there, depending on the bike, especially. The KTM group is a big one for that. The other bikes aren't quite as bad, but we offer a knuckle and we offer a linkage arm. And you don't necessarily need one with the other, and they have two different design goals, really. So the linkage arm, we make adjustable. So the length of the arm is actually, you can change that from stock. So you can go a millimeter shorter, you can go stock length or up to plus 4 millimeters longer in 1 millimeter increments.
Hmm.
So it's like six parts in one. Really quick to adjust to the track, take 10, 15 minutes tops and you're on a different length. And when you make the arm longer, it lowers the rear end. And that's not really the point from our perspective. I mean, it happens whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
But as you lower the rear, you're raking out the front.
Yes.
So it's a handling modification. So if you're going to a sand track or something, you can lower that rear and rake out the front for more stability. If you're going to then take that same setup and go run more tighter or even a supercross, you can even shorten the arm shorter than stock or somewhere in between, wherever you.
Yeah. And that's going to put more weight on the front as well as just make a steeper rake.
Yeah. So it'll turn in a little bit easier. So that's really what the linkage arm is for, is adjusting that rake angle up front. It does lower the rear as a side effect. If you're looking for a little bit lower rear ends, it might be a solution. We don't sell a lowering link in the general sense. Those are usually really long.
And yeah.
Those can mess up your suspension because it changes the ratio so much. so we don't even offer one. Ours is just that at the longest setting at 4 millimeters longer, you're only lowering the rear. Like, it really depends on where you measure it, but half an inch or so.
Okay.
So it's not much, but it does change the rake in the foot.
So when I think of like changing the rake, say specifically to Supercross, because we are about 30 days out from Anaheim 1, like the biggest gains that could be made with the rake would probably be in the whoops, so that the bike's more stable in a straight line. How do you sort of balance that straight line stability with having to knife through bowl corners, which is not easy?
I mean, that's the game, right?
Yeah.
Everything is a compromise. So you can get really great in one area and garbage in the other, or you kind of go in between and get okay at both. It's a rider preference. A lot of it depends on the rest of your bike setup.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of people calling like, hey, what's the right offset for me? I'm like, I don't know. Who are you? How fast are you? How tall are you? What bike are you
on? Let's start with a name.
What track are you riding? There's so many variables. I can tell people what works for most people and what generally people like, but there's no way I can tell you what's right for you. The only way you're going to know that is just try it yourself and go test with it, which is one of the main reasons we made everything so adjustable. That's why we have an adjustable linkage arm, adjustable offset on our pro clamps. So if you try it one offset and you go, oh, wow, this is not what I wanted, adjust it to another one and give it a shot. And then you will find something that is better than where you started. So, yeah, big on adjustability. And then circling back on the linkage stuff, the knuckle is where you get big changes in your motion ratio of the rear suspension. So the main knuckle that we make right now is for our KTM group stuff. We have one for all the gen bikes, 2016, 2023, and current 2025 gen. And in all of those, what it's doing is it's ramping up the progression in the rear end. So you get better bottoming resistance. You can actually go softer on the setup, so it absorbs that acceleration chop and those small kickers, and you get a better, smoother, more compliant ride. Really tracks the ground better, but while maintaining that bottoming resistance. So the knuckle on the 2023 and the same as 2024 and the new 2025 generation bikes, we specifically designed it so you don't need the linkage arm. So if you look at other companies, they're selling you a whole linkage kit and it's like $500, $600. We sell just the knuckle. It's $300. You don't need the linkage arm at all. You just put it on. And on those last two generations, you don't have to change your spring. You don't have to change valving. All you got to do is change your clickers a little bit and you have a better ride. So it's a really good low cost of entry performance game. Comes with bearings. They're all OEM KTM bearings. We get them from KTM. So bearings and seals. Just buy it, take your old one off, put the new one on, and you're good.
So how are you able to figure something out that the KTM group hasn't, aside from their finances?
Well, I don't know why, but for the last three gens, they've gone with a really linear motion ratio, and it just doesn't work well. I don't have a good answer why they haven't changed that. Yamaha changed theirs in 2025 to a more progressive ratio than what they were running, and everybody likes that.
Yeah.
So they figured out and made a change, but for some reason KTM has just kept it where it's been, which is bizarre.
So when you say a more progressive ratio, like what is the overall like sensation or feedback that you'd be getting from a racer going from one to the other?
Well, with more progression, you're basically just getting more bottoming resistance.
So okay. So more hold up.
Yeah, effectively increasing the spring rate towards the end of the stroke. So in the case of the latest gen KTM stuff, you can run basically, let's say that you've got a bike set up and it doesn't bottom like crazy. It feels good there, but it kicks out and all the acceleration chop and it doesn't really hold traction well. You can achieve that same bottoming resistance, but then take care of all that chop and acceleration kicks with our linkage knuckle. Or alternatively, if you have it set up the other way where it bottoms like crazy, but does do pretty well in that chop. You can set it up so it does well in both.
Cool. I like that. That's a ton of cool information there. Have you ever, I'm assuming you've done this, everything that you make for a KTM or everything that you make for a Yamaha, like weight wise, if you pull off everything that you'd be replacing, what's the weight savings, on say like a KTM going with all of your products?
I don't know the answer to that, off the top of my head. I can tell you what each one is.
Damn it, Billy.
like KTM's done a pretty good job of making their bikes pretty lightweight. But they haven't done it in a way where it keeps that stiffness up. Like it causes that issue with the triple clamp, like I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
The last two gens, well, in 2023, they came out with all new linkage on that new frame and everything. And that was incredibly heavy. They changed all the bearings out. And I, just by looking at all that, it seems that they changed that to save some money. So it was the same bearing everywhere, the same seal everywhere. Which does make sense from a manufacturing standpoint.
Yeah, volume standpoint, yeah.
But it ended up with like a really heavy linkage system. And then in 2025, they came out with their all new linkage system, which all they did was go back to the same bearings they were using on the 2016 bike. So the marketing spun it as an all new linkage bearing system and more compliance and this and that, which is just marketing nonsense.
It's more like a throwback Thursday.
Yeah, they just reverted back to the 2016 design because it worked better.
I got a 2016 in the garage.
Yeah. I ride the 2022 Gasket or Husky as my main bike.
Yeah.
And that's that old chassis. And that was a really good chassis. And then they kind of screwed things up in 2023.
With your background and the experience that you've had, is it not also like, is it like almost sometimes infuriating when you see how, like, when, if a new model comes out and you're like, oh, they cheaped out? Like,
yeah, there's different goals because they're not making a bike to be, despite their ready to race slogan or whatever,
right.
They're not making a bike that Chase can go and ride and win a championship on.
Yeah, that's never the intent.
They need to make a bike that you can go into the dealership and afford.
Yes.
So there's always room, and that applies to everybody, Honda, Yamaha, whoever. They have to make a bike that they can sell at a reasonable price. So there's always another 5, 10, 15% left on the table, which costs a lot more money, but you get that extra performance. And that's where the aftermarket has an opportunity to step up and make better parts.
Mm.
I mean, for most people, stock clamps are just fine. You don't need aftermarket clamps, but there is opportunity for more performance, better comfort, better feel, more precision with aftermarket clamps, but they're going to cost you money.
There you go. Yeah. I'm always a big proponent of I love riding my motorcycle. If there's something that can make it better and get more enjoyment out of it, sign me up. Where can people find out more information? I know that if they're not already following Luxon MX on social, they need to do that. You always have, you did your Black Friday deal, if I'm not mistaken. Hopefully that was really successful for you. But you guys are always coming out with new stuff. Like, for people to be able to keep the finger on the pulse of it all, how do they go about doing so?
We always post new stuff to Instagram. So that's one of our more popular routes. Obviously the website has all the information on it. There's an email list. If you get on the website, you sign up for the email list, and we occasionally send out email, not as often as we should, really. So you're certainly not going to be spammed with a bunch of crap. It's just once every few months, I'll send out a new update of new products and what's going on.
Well, that is a welcome change to the unsubscribing that I do almost on a weekly basis from like Home Depot or whoever else that is just in my inbox. I bet I could count probably like 5 spam emails that are unread right now at this very moment. Billy, this has been awesome. Is there anything we haven't discussed so far that you wanted to touch on before I let you get going on the rest of your day?
Not too much just yet. We got some new stuff coming out that I can't really talk about until it's out in the open. So come A1, you're going to see some new stuff, and we have some even more new stuff beyond that. So there should be some exciting things in the works in the next few months.
Sounds awesome, dude. Well, when that stuff hits the ground running, we will do another one of these. And yeah, I'm going to be in your inbox bugging you about doing some blog posts, man, because I think those are impactful for people.
Yeah.
Killer. Awesome. Well, don't hang up just yet here on the podcast, but I really appreciate you making some time. Billy here on the Big MX Radio podcast, brought to you by Luxon MX.